All right. How you doing out there, Maggie Dave?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
It's funny when we do like multiple takes of like the same episode, just trying to sound like it's all. What's I keep wanting to say generic, but what is the real word? God, I can't believe I just forgot the word. But you know, trying to make it seem like everything is authentically just being said for the first time. But I've been thinking about the format of the podcast, and I think I need to probably get you more involved in the conversation and things that are going on, instead of this just being the podcast where that guy listens to that one guy rant. And pontificate. I've been using that word a lot lately, and it seems to bother people, and I think I'm onto something. Whenever you tell them that they're pontificating about something like that, they seem to get I would feel pretty validated if somebody described something I was doing in that way. But I've only ever described myself like that. So I think it might be
one of those buzzwords people are using nowadays, like conversation. Like, there's a local sports talk radio I listen to, and for a while there, the host was really, I mean, he was using the word conversation. I mean, I counted one time in like a segment, and he used it 23 times in a segment, conversation. Anyway.
He find a word. It's like a Joe Rogan. He finds a word.
Yeah.
He's got to, like, if it's got like three syllables or more, he puts that thing in his back pocket. When like Jordan Peterson comes on, he pulls as many of them out as he can.
Yeah, he's got thesaurus pulled up on his little laptop there, and he's like, "Oh, what word can I use for this? Oh yeah. I'm using that one." And then people are like, "What the hell did he say?" What? And everyone's Googling. What did he say? Oh, why didn't he just like, say this?
He doesn't even know what he said. Jordan Peterson humors him. That's why he likes to have... Jordan Peterson makes Joe Rogan feel smart. I think that Jordan Peterson really... You know, and all the kind of the controversy over what he got on... Like what he said about the Brett Kavanaugh thing where he was... basically came out saying that Kavanaugh shouldn't accept the seat. And I think a lot of people felt betrayed because he was the guy that came to prominence for not trying to placate the left. And this idea that like, no, you can't use these tactics. And he always, you know, calls him the radical left and communist and socialist, whatever. He's the guy that's always talking about the Gulag Archipelago or whatever you say it. And, you know, so whenever he came out and basically said that Kavanaugh should placate the left mob with no evidence, you know, it'd been one thing if there had been a shred of evidence. And it's funny, Ben Shapiro, talks about everything that goes on. Like it's, you know, I think he says like Trump season four. And it's so funny because it really is like a soap opera. Sometimes the way everything kind of weaves into one another, you get to talk about Jordan Peterson, takes you into Brett Kavanaugh. Then, you know, we could go so many directions from here. We could talk about Avenatti. We could talk about this thing that Sotomayor came out. And I mean, there's all these storylines that are running together. And I think it shows how shallow the pond is over there, the swamp. All these people are like, you know, it's like the same characters in a TV show. They're like, oh, let's bring this guy back, you know, from this earlier storyline. And it's a, you know, every once in a while, and well, not every once in a while, he's a very obviously astute guy, but Ben comes up with some clever. I like him for the most part. He's an elitist. At the end of the day, and I think he's an unapologetic elitist, and I think that he's got no illusion. It's so funny when people protest him because, I mean, he's he is so mild and uncontroversial compared to everybody else. I think that it seems like I've only followed him now for a few years, but it seems like maybe when he was like in high school or college that he tried to be a little controversial at times, and that all of the bad will people have for him. That one Fleck guy, Austin Fleck or whatever his name, that the big guy who goes out to the protest with the, like the microphone taped to the spoon and he talks to people. He goes out, he's always going out to the people that protest Ben Shapiro, and he's like, what's your biggest problem with him? And nobody ever knows. Yeah. You know, they can't pull out a quote. And it's because, like, of all the people that get protest, I can see why people protest Gavin McInnes. You know, he is purposefully controversial. I think that that's how he tries to stay relevant with his roots, is he's specifically trying to be kind of in your face and that whole punk thing. I get why people protest Milo. I get why people protest Ann Coulter. These people are antagonists. They're antagonizing the left because somebody has to, and thank God they are, you know, right. Because that bothers them so much, that the idea that there's people on the right who don't give a shit about being a part of the club, you know, and they're willing to say whatever, and they're willing to piss on all the, because there's most people in that Hollywood and New York, this, you know, LA, Chicago, all this stuff, they couldn't, most of them could not fathom saying some of the things that like Ann Coulter says, because they know if they did, they'd be wiped off the face of the earth. It's unimaginable. It's actually kind of funny because this podcast is supposed to be a redo, but it's going in a little bit different direction. But I was at work tonight, and I'm not going to say on this podcast what I do, but I have a lot of extra time on my hands, and I was thinking about it. And I was trying to understand like the logic on some things. And I know some of it doesn't come down to logic when it comes to the left. Am I right? Am I right, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, just pull out any major story that the logic is just gone. I mean, if you were to look at this outside of this political climate, say you were to look at some of the things that the left says, you know, even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like it just doesn't make any sense at all. Like the lack of, the biggest thing right now is their denial of losing elections. You know, when they lose something, they just won't accept defeat at all. You know, right. It's got to be somebody cheated, or we got to recount this. We got to do this, that, or the other. It's just getting crazy.
They complain that you're not going to accept their results, and then they just immediately don't accept any of the results. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty desperate. But yeah, you know, it is. There is so much, and Owen Benjamin was talking about this on his YouTube channel, where he was talking about the difference between satire and sarcasm, you know, and that a lot of people mistake one for the other. If you're just following somebody's logic and showing how silly that is, that's satire. And a lot of people mistake it for sarcasm. Sarcasm is like, you know, sarcasm is like what Ben Shapiro does, where he goes, oh yeah, media, that's so great. You're doing such a good job. That's why everybody loves you. You know, that's sarcasm. And that's literally what Owen Benjamin uses as an example, is like Ben Shapiro. But satire is taking something that, you know, taking a point that they, a logic, and fulfilling it, like the senator or congressman that said he was going to identify as a woman so he could start talking about abortion. You know, it's following their logic and showing how ridiculous it is. That's not sarcasm. That's satire.
Right.
But, you know, I was trying to understand like how a reasonable person, because I know that there are people on the radical left that they just don't care if it makes sense. They just list rules, and the rules don't have to work together. You know, it's just, but so I was trying to think about like the logic behind, okay, so you cannot choose who you're attracted to when you talk to somebody. And I'm not even talking about a radical leftist. I'm talking about a person who feels like, as far as modern society's going, that they are an accepting person. They would say to you that you don't have any choice. You're just attracted to whoever you're attracted to. So, okay, you know, I mean, I don't have any experience, I guess. I never felt like I made a choice myself. So, you know, can I accept that line of, you know, reason? Sure. Okay. You don't have any choice on who you love, on who you're attracted to, but then you do have a choice of what your gender is. Yeah. You know, so I don't get how you don't have a choice on who you are want to have sex with, but you do have a choice on what gender you want to identify as. And so I was trying to break down, like, what are the differences? Okay, well, I guess attraction might have something to do with it. If you feel like you're a boy and you're attracted to other boys, then maybe it makes you, maybe there are, you know, I'm no psychologist by any stretch, but I read once that men back in like the 50s, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s, there, you know, a lot more men would, well, I don't know if more men, but men back then would wear women's undergarments. You know, they would wear panties and like a bra under their clothes. Nobody knew about it. And they did it because back then, it was the idea that the man was the sole provider. You know, if your wife worked, then it was some kind of failure. The idea was that you had a job, you and your wife had kids, your wife raised your children, you provided for them. And for a lot of people, that was really stressful. And so for men back then, they would feel the stress, and it would make them, if they could take on that role, they felt like that the women had a lot less stress on them. They didn't have the weight of the household. Now, obviously, being a stay-at-home parent is a full-time job, but just perception. When you're going to work every day, you come home, you're like, you know, what have you been doing all day? You just been hanging out the house. I mean, so especially back then with the attitudes people had, that makes sense to me that it was a sort of a way of acting out and like assuming a different role because it was kind of perception that society had for gender roles. And I think that there's some things that are right with that. Some things I want to start getting away from making everything so simple and just taking a stand, making something like abortion or making something like gender roles or whatever, making it like, well, it's just simple. You think this way, that's the right way to think. If you don't think like this, you're evil. It's like so many issues are complex, and there's not a one size fits all to anything. I think that, you know, our the stances that we take now are just different ways in a lot of ways that the government divides us. So we can't make it so easy for them. I don't believe that global warming is happening like Al Gore thinks it's happening, but I do think that the Earth is affected by things that man does on some level. I don't think it's a level to where we're like melting the polar ice caps. I think that the Earth cycle is cyclical. We've only been recording weather for a really short amount of time. There's all kinds of evidence that there's catastrophic events before man was widespread across the earth. So, but I do believe that we should live, we should have clean water, and that we should have clean, you know, towns, and the forest should be cleaned, and people should not, you know, do, should be responsible when they're drilling for oil and gas and all these things. So I think that when you make it like, well, the, if you're on the right, you don't believe in science, if you don't believe in climate change, well, maybe I don't buy everything that you're trying to sell me, but there is a place in the middle where we both agree. And I think it's just silly. I was just thinking about these things. I was like, well, why don't you get to choose your race? Because choosing your gender and choosing your race seem very similar to me. It's because, again, it's you're looking at how our culture perceives certain roles. The way our culture perceives an African American man is different than how they perceive like a white man or like a Latino man or like an Asian. I mean, the way our society perceives different roles, like right or wrong, there are different perceptions. And I mean, everybody has seen like a white guy who acts like he's black. Well, he's comfortable. That's what he identifies with. So I feel like it's so disingenuous to like have these sort of pick and choose. Well, I can choose this, but I can't choose that. And it just feels like you're making it so that you can win some silly argument. You know, if you can change your gender, something that you're born with, like a penis or a vagina, it's a literal thing. Well, it's how is being born with darker skin pigmentation any different? And, you know, so I was just thinking about this, and I wanted to have a conversation with people that disagree with me, but I don't know a whole lot of people around where I live. And on Facebook, people just lose their fucking mind if you disagree with them. They can't handle civil discourse anymore. You can't ask questions and search for the truth. You just can't. And so I just from a really honest place in my heart, I started typing this just long thing on Facebook. And it kind of pretty quickly switched gears from wondering why we can't have honest conversations to like saying why I thought, and it was going to be this long thing. And it was probably 30, 45 minutes. I'm sitting there typing on my phone, trying to get the words out. And by the time I was almost done, I was like, fuck it. I don't care anymore. I could read through it and see that like, maybe I was going to reach a few people, but then some other people were just going to take it personally. And things are so polarized right now. And, you know, I want to get you in here talking about this Dave. It's like I was telling you the story yesterday. Have you ever been to one of those chain restaurants, and then they have like the restaurant, they have the bar over there? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I was in one Friday night, actually.
Yeah, so they have like a bartender there, but they're only considered a bartender by title. Like that,
right?
That person couldn't.
They are standing behind the bar.
They can only make the drinks from that restaurant. You know, they wouldn't be. I got into a huge thing one time when I waited tables with a guy who was so mad that I didn't consider him like a real bartender. And it was all over like a really, really poorly made Long Island iced tea. It's like, you know, he's like, I'm a real bartender. I said, oh, yeah, well, make me a Manhattan then. Don't open the book. But anyway, so I was standing up by the bar, and I'm a older, chubbier guy. And the bartender that I was talking to is an older, chubbier guy. And have you ever heard of the keto diet?
Oh, yeah. Very familiar with it.
So I've done the keto diet a few times. I've lost some weight, gained it back. I mean, I think I understand sort of the basic principles, but there's a lot I haven't ever really gotten into like all the macros or people that weigh their food. So I've only just experimented. I did the Jordan Peterson thing where I only ate meat for a few weeks. I've actually felt great, but that was the point that this guy was, I started talking about the keto diet and how it had worked. He goes, well, I tried that before when I was weightlifting. And like him and I looked at each other for a second, like, yeah, well, it's probably been a while ago because we both know you haven't been weightlifting. He's like, well, yeah, you know, back years ago when I would weightlift, I tried that keto diet and I just didn't have the energy for it. And I, you know how you're talking to somebody and you just kind of smell bullshit. You know, they've all of a sudden their story is changing, you know, mid story because they kind of realize it's not plausible. You know, I'm talking about like a what's his name? Bluto, Big Show. What's the guy's name? We don't have to say his real name, but you know, what I'm talking about the liar at we worked with this guy who said he got punched in the face by the Big Show, and then Show like took him in the back and was like telling him he was the first guy who'd ever taken a punch. Like, this guy told some whoppers. Anyway, getting off track. So this guy is saying that he tried the keto back, you know, years ago when he lifted weights and he didn't have any energy. And that was one of the things. I don't know a whole lot about the science behind it. I just, you know, I got a couple books about like recipes, but that was one of the things that I did notice was I hadn't had energy like that since high school. It was crazy. So I have a little bit of experience with the diet, and I also kind of feel like he's bullshitting me with the weightlifting thing. So I start arguing with this guy. I'm like, well, you know, I actually did it and I had tons of energy. You know, I mean, I had energy for days. Maybe since you tried it, since it was so long ago, obviously, maybe they have fine tuned it. I said, you know, some people, they will try to eat lean meat. You have to eat real fatty stuff because your body's burning fat instead of carbs and all this. And so then he goes, well, I mean, maybe if you're like a normal person doing normal stuff, you have energy. But I pretty much guarantee you that you wouldn't have energy if you were lifting weights. And so back and forth we went. And then at some point I realized we're two fat guys arguing about the best way to lose weight. Like, maybe neither of us knows, you know? And I feel like that's how politics has gotten people that have some personal experiences that aren't backed up by, you know, maybe necessarily any real science or fact, or they hear bits and pieces, you know, they hear somebody say something didn't work for them or whatever, or they just make assumptions and nobody really knows what they're talking about, but they feel pretty strongly that, like, I wasn't exactly sure I was right so much as I was pretty sure he was wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was one of those kind of conversations. And I feel like so much of politics has gotten there of like, well, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I feel super, super strongly. And things have devolved that way. I know that, you know, you've probably got some family members or friends or whatever that you've run into this where they don't really know what they're talking about, but they just know that they're right and they know that you're wrong.
Yeah, again, you know, I make no, you know, bones about it. I'm, you know, conservative all the way. And that's one thing I've really been trying to read up on a lot is why people are drawn to, you know, let's say the left or liberalism or whatever. And I think a lot of it, honestly, is about, you know, feelings. Because you look at the platform, most of the issues that it's come across, it's based on feelings, right. And in a lot of ways, like, you know, the people who don't feel the way you do about things, right. You're trying to get them to feel the same way you do. And if they don't feel the same way you do, then they are bad, you know. That's a bad person because they don't support whatever, you know, well, whatever the feeling of the day is. It's like I was saying,
like, Everybody tries to oversimplify everything and make it everything mm-hmm. black and white.
Right. And that's a big part of it too. Cause I mean, it's like, hey, do you support passing this law or whatever? No, because I don't, for whatever reason. And then they say, well, I feel like these people should have this, that, or the other. And so now you hate this group of people. And it's like, no, I never said that. I don't think everyone else should have to change their lives for that, is what I'm saying.
Well, it's a perfect example is that, I don't know if you heard anything about this, but there was a student senator for Berkeley. And I think it was an Asian girl. I don't remember her name, but they were trying to pass some kind of like gay. I don't know enough about the story. I heard about it probably like Ben Shapiro or somebody, but it was a student senator, and there was the student body there at Berkeley was trying to push through some kind of legislation that had to do with the LGBT community, and this senator is a conservative and she's a Christian. And she said, basically, it was a really well thought out statement that she put out, basically saying, look, I don't know that I can truly represent the people that I represent and vote for this. And so all she did was abstain from voting. And I mean, I think it was like a gay guy or something like that was on the student council that brought it forth. Like he just lost it and they're calling for a resignation. They're protesting her. She tried to write an op-ed for the paper. They rejected it. The gay student body government, whatever guy that brought the legislation forward is just slamming her, is calling her hateful. And it's like, you don't get to label somebody all the things you don't like because they don't bow to everything that you think that, this person doesn't think that there's even a debate about what he's bringing forth. There's right. no consideration. I guarantee you that the person that put it together took no consideration for people's religious views on whatever he was doing. And this kind of time where we're supposed to be tolerant, that's why you have a government made up of multiple people, so that you have different views, different people are represented. And obviously that girl wasn't going to stop the legislation. She just didn't she made a very conscious decision that she couldn't vote for it. And it's just a typical lesson of how the people on the left, if you don't fall in line, and that's exactly the attitude that I ran into earlier this week, when all I did was just kind of disagree and just say, hey, look, why don't you come up with something substantive? Why? I was always taught that, and I wasn't ever formally in debate, but I've always loved to debate people and like take devil's advocate. It's just a fun way to search for the truth. And I was always taught that if you couldn't do anything better than name call and personal attacks, then your argument must be really weak. That was a sign of a weak argument, was that you had to rely on personal attacks. And so that's when you see so many people on the left that attack President Trump personally. Well, it's like, okay, you don't like enough of his policy, so why don't you argue the substance? Because there's a major conflict, and this is what we were trying to talk about last night, but of the cult of personality of Donald Trump. He's always been a figure of some controversy because he's just this like self-made millionaire. Well, it's not self-made millionaire, but I mean, he took a lot of money and made it to a lot more money, and he's been able to remain relevant the whole time, never was accused of being a racist, always was a kind of one of those playboys. So, but he's that kind of guy. And then whenever he got political, he said all these things that people wanted to hear after the 8 years of Obama just browbeating. We thought, and this is, again, this is something we were talking about on the lost episode of Technical Difficulties, but I was really apprehensive about Obama, and I think rightly so. But one of the things that I thought positive, and I don't know if this is something you agree with or not, but one of the things I thought was going to be positive about it was that at least we were going to, okay, well, we'll have our first black president. We'll sort of move into this new chapter where the dream of Martin Luther King, where he said, and I don't think this is an exact quote, but it's like, I dream of a day when people can be judged not by the color of their skin, but like the content of their soul or personality or whatever, their character. And I think for a lot of people that even didn't like Obama, didn't support him, there was this idea that we were going to get move into this new era of beyond a lot of the race-related politics. And it was such a disappointing thing that Obama just made it 10 times worse. Did you even have that as a consolation? I mean, did you think at least, like, were you fooled like I was that in 2008 that at least things were going to get better as far as race relations?
Man, he had the chance to. I didn't know if he would or not, because, you know, I don't trust, you know, politicians, what they say. I know you're the same way. You know, they can come out and say all this stuff, but it's like, prove it to me, you know. And he by far, in a way, had the best chance of any previous president to do that, and had the 8 years to do it and to make things better, and he just didn't. So yeah, that's a big failure on him, along with some other, you know, policy issues I had with him, no doubt. But that was one of his, honestly, probably one of his biggest failures that will come. I think history will show that as well, because, I mean, you know, right now it's hard for some people, you know, to look back and have a perspective on where we're at right now. You know, in 30 years, I feel like people look back and be like, geez, you know, they had the first black president for 8 years and race relations got worse, and he was a cause of some of that. You know what I mean?
I think he was a big cause of a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the things, I guess, that always bothers me when the Obamas or like Jay-Z and Beyonce or like any of these actors or these different people, when they bitch about America. Like, if you're the Obamas, everything that people accused Trump of trying to do, that he was going to come in and use the government to enrich himself, that's what Barack and Michelle Obama did. They used the White House to become rich and famous. That without it, we wouldn't know who they were. I mean, Obama would have obviously probably still be a fairly relevant senator at this point, but they certainly wouldn't be like millionaires 100 times over and have the kind of fame and that cult of personality for them that they have now. So they really, and if you look at what Barack Obama is, in a lot of ways, he is like a really his politics aside, if you just look at his story, it's a story about following the American dream. I mean, you become president of the United States and everybody loves you and you become wealthy and you become famous. And, you know, he tried to do some big things for his base. So if I'm the Obamas, I'm looking around, I'm thinking, wow, you know, we really, nowhere else in the world could this have happened, where all of our aspirations and dreams, they've lived a very charmed existence, yet they've got all this stuff, this anger and angst to bitch about. And I wonder, sometimes, I used to think I had it figured out, but I don't think I have it figured out now. I wonder if, like, they really, really are that stupid that they are, you know, they're bite the hand that feeds, or if it's just the idea that that's what you have to do for power, because Obama wasn't what he said he was. If he was, he would have helped the people of Chicago. You know, that was the thing. Louis Farrakhan even called him out. Like, you didn't do anything for your people, the people that got you, who, you know, got you to where you were, and all the people that suffering in Chicago is a shithole. And here Obama was a president from Chicago and never made any of that a priority. He never made crime a priority. As a matter of fact, he worked against it. He made things worse. He didn't just make race relations worse. He made relations with police officers worse. And if you're in places like the inner city of Chicago, I don't know much about Chicago, so I'm not going to speak like I'm some expert, but in the place, you know, the places of Chicago where all the people are being murdered every day, I know that it's a very fragile relationship between them and the police, but the president should be encouraging it, because that's how things get better. You know, if law enforcement is able to restore order where gang members aren't shooting at each other and killing little kids, that doesn't get better because people are afraid to call the police. It only gets better when the police are able to come in and restore order. And Obama made all those things worse. And so I wonder sometimes, because he obviously wasn't genuine. He didn't become president because he cared about people, because he didn't care about making things better race-wise. He made them worse. And so it just seems like whenever I hear stuff about conspiracies that, like, the Obamas and the Clintons and the Bushes and like Beyonce and Jay-Z and all these people are part of these secret societies, I kind of believe it, because it's not immediately obvious whose interest that Michelle and Barack Obama was serving. And I don't think it was even their own. You know, I think that was part of the deal, that they play along and that they get to be rich and famous. But, you know, I do. I think there's people out there that control the media, that own a lot, you know, the George Soroses. But I think that George Soros is probably the people that are really in power laugh about, you know, hey, we got everybody thinking it's fucking Soros. Isn't that funny? when they're really the one pulling the strings, because the Soros shit's even too obvious. I mean, I really think that you just get down the rabbit hole. But it's really a shame the way Obama let the country down at a time when he could have been a great president. He really could have. Sure, he was going to do some far left stuff. He was always going to try the Obamacare thing and whatever. And I mean, I think within the proper perspective, it's not a totally, it's kind of an ignorant thing to do, but it's not an evil thing to try to give everybody health care. I mean, I think it was a vanity project, but I think that even with that, I think that Obama could have been a great president if he truly cared about this country, and he could have really brought people together. People were going to listen to him. So all the things that he said to get elected, that he was going to be transparent, that he was going to work to unite the country, like, all, it was all bullshit. It went out the window immediately. It was never his intention. And so Trump is the answer to that. He's the blunt object. You know what I'm saying? You feel like you have the key, and you spend 8 years fumbling around the lock, and the fucking door does not open. And so you have the guy that says, "Hey, get out of the way," and he just kicks the fucking door down. You know, I mean, there were so many things that Obama did to weaken our country, and that, again, another part of that is whose interest does that serve? To weaken our military, to make us appear weak on the world stage. Of course, Germany and France and Russia and China and all these fuckers loved Barack Obama because he was a pushover. They all love that. They don't love the U.S. projecting strength. You know, Angela Merkel was probably a kid when the U.S. was kicking the fucking shit out of Germans. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's like, well, she's probably not that old, but you know, Germany was still had that hanging over their head for years and years. So, yeah, France doesn't like a strong U.S. Germany or Russia, no, England, they don't like to have to deal with that. And Obama was a pushover. And so you bring Trump, who, yeah, in a lot of ways, he's a thug. He's a street fighter. He's a blunt object. He'll get the job done, but it's going to be messy, you know. And partly he was a response to Obama, not just culturally, though. Not just that Obama blamed everything on white people and Trump came and said, yeah, that's bullshit. But it's also that Obama was weak in foreign policy. People knew Trump would be strong and Obama ruined the fucking economy. And people thought that maybe Trump could figure it out. And I think in a lot of ways they were vindicated. They were right. And that's the kind of stuff that is, I think, the biggest problem now when you try to find middle ground with the left, because when you have somebody that after 2 years of Trump, they want to tell you that nothing bad about the economy was Obama's fault, but all the good things now were because of him. And you say, well, what policy then? Well, I, you know, it's fucking him. I mean, number one, the president takes too much credit for the economy anyway. Those guys don't have near the impact that like the Fed has, you know, the Federal Reserve in setting rates and different things. But I mean, sure, Obama was handed kind of a pile of shit with the housing market and stuff all falling apart at the end of Bush's term. And you can concede that, but there wasn't anything that he ever did to stimulate the economy. He only put more regulations. He gave pouts of cash away to Iran. He was fucking getting us involved in the bullshit Paris Accords. It was just a way to limit our economy and keep us down anyway. There are so many things about that people oversimplify, and I get really tired of it. I have a family member who, you know, is a good guy. He's over in like helping the Peace Corps, but he jaws on about fucking climate change. And it's like, dude, you should know that the poor countries that you're in, if you try to start limiting their ability to use fossil fuels and put high taxes on that stuff and try to make it where those people have to have expensive ways of getting power, they're fucked. You know, the some of these countries in Africa and poor countries all over the world, the only way that their people are ever going to get out of poverty is by industrialization. It's going to be messy. That's why, you know, India and China are India and China are the biggest polluters, because they have taken some of the greatest strides forward from people that were in abject poverty to now are hyper-industrialized. And for a lot of these people that are suffering and dying in Africa, you can't go over there. I know he's like in a village where he's talking about taking the bus into town, and it's like an hour or something ride. And then he shows a picture of the bus, and it's just a van. It's not even that big a van. You know, it's like a fucking, it's not even like a Sprinter van. And there's like a shitload of people crammed in it. And so to get to town from this village, you get in they call it a bus, but it's a van, and they drive you to town, they drive you back. Well, tell those people that you're going to put a high tax on gasoline because, they need to get something electric, and they need to be able to, you know, power their homes, not with fossil fuels, but that, you know, they need to get expensive panels and fucking put away. I mean, you're going to kill their chances, but it's also why something like the Paris Accords was never meant to actually address the problem, because you're not going to be able, the U.S. can't do enough to offset what China's doing. And China wasn't part of the Paris Accords. Like China and India, they didn't even really make any promises of what they were going to do. They just said they were going to try to cut down in areas that they were already going to try to cut down in, because their air quality is for shit. So it's just kind of laughable when people say, well, if you're against all this climate change nonsense and all this legislation that you're against science. It's like, man, it's so much more complex than that. It's so much more complex than that. And to make it just like it black and white, that is the most ignorant thing to do. But how do you have a conversation with somebody like that, that says science, dude, climate change is science. Well, what about gender? What is that? That's not science though. You know? Yeah, no, it's science. It's science to disagree. What do they fucking agree on? You know, don't say scientist. And then like you use Bill Nye, the Science Guy, as your example. He's a, you know, he's a comedian, but you know, show me the research. Where scientists all agree that gender is just some kind of thing that you can choose and be fluid in. I mean, I'm 38 years old. It's taken me a good amount of my life to understand what it means to be a man. How about you, Dave? You know, you're a little bit older than me. Do you fully understand what it means to be a man, even at your age?
No, because there's different. Something like that, there's just too many there's different stages of life where you have to do, like, you know, you move out of we did this little study at our church. It was how to be a godly man, or, you know, what the Bible says about being a man and stuff, and there were like some different sections of life they divided into. It was really interesting. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but yeah, there's just like what you were saying, there's no, you know, it's super complicated, and then it's also super simple, you know, in a sure. way, because it's like the Ron Swanson, you know, book to be a, you know, in the book to be a man, he just opens the first page and it just says be a man, you know, right. Because I think it comes instinctively, but also there's a crap load you have to learn too. And I mean, it's, you know, just like being a woman or a man, it's not that simple, you know, and all these issues that they want to try and make cut and dry, yes or no, it's just not like that at all. It's, life isn't like that, and neither is that. And, you know, like the climate change thing, my thing is, yeah, you know, I'm not going around throwing trash on the ground and all that stuff, but I'm not about to give Al Gore a shit ton of money either, because that guy doesn't know what the hell to do. You know, he's just getting rich while he's flying around in these private jets, and then he's preaching against it, you know, just like,
yeah, his house is, he's using right. up more energy at his house in, you know, in a day than I'm using in a month.
Right.
I mean, come on, who are you lecturing?
Right. So when you're out there preaching that crap and you're living like that and you don't really have any answers, you're just like, well, we got to regulate more and we need billions of dollars to do that. Well, you know, screw you. You can't have my money. I have things that I have to do with my money for my family. So, you know, screw off, dude.
Yeah.
Show me something.
You'd just be making somebody else rich. Right. At the end of the day, that you're it's some other company that some other person owns, and in one way or another, these people are benefiting. I mean, Al Gore makes these movies, and you know, he's not handing them out, folks. He charges you. I mean, it's a business. Whenever Michael Moore and like Al Gore and these people, when their movies flop, people are upset. You know, they expect that you are going to, out of a sense of fear or duty or guilt or whatever, that you're going to respond in kind. And it's a whole industry that they're all, you know, they're all buddies, they're all friends. Their friends own the place that sells the whatevers, and you got to have this now on your house, and it's got to be, your roof's got to be a certain, you know, color, and it's got to have a certain thing on that. You only get the thing from this guy, and just so happens that guy's my sister's husband, and you know, it's all a special interest too. So it's really rich when you hear people attack Republicans for. I just wish that we could get to a point in politics where people were just sort of honest. They held their side accountable, and we debated the issues. You know, because it's, people are getting so weak at debate. We're all like, Did you ever see that movie, The Great White Hype? It had like David Wayans and that, like that white guy. And it was kind of the thing where like Tyson fought Buster Douglas, and you know, you could just tell Tyson was kind of fat and he wasn't taking it seriously. And Buster Douglas was not a nothing. It's always portrayed like that Buster Douglas was a punk. Like Buster Douglas was not a nothing, but Mike Tyson didn't take him seriously. And he just, if you're a fighter and you don't spar, it's that Mike Tyson's got that great quote that says everybody's got a plan until they get punched. And it's, you know, if you're a fighter and you don't, you know, another example was the year that McFadden and Felix Jones were here at Arkansas. It was like their maybe junior year, the year that we went like 10-2 and before the season started, he had Felix Jones and McFadden and I think it was Casey Dick or something, maybe Peyton Hillis. They're all wearing like the green jerseys. They weren't getting hit in practice. And we played USC here in Fayetteville. And I think Felix fumbled the ball like twice. McFadden, they had bad games because they hadn't been getting hit. All of a sudden, you're playing USC. What'd you fucking think was going to happen? You know, those guys at that time were going to hit you as hard as anybody in the country. And so we're just getting weak because what people are trying to do is just convince the public that this other guy's a shithead. You know, well, he's a shithead and we're not. Well, you're doing the same thing. Well, yeah, I know, but he's a shithead. So it's not okay when he does it. But when we do it, we're being noble about it. You know, okay. So if Maxine Waters, if you're going to bitch about rhetoric, then shut the fuck up with your rhetoric, you know, or don't talk about it. Maybe you're not the one that needs to come out and talk about Trump's rhetoric whenever your rhetoric has had actually a literal effect. People want to attribute all this shit to Trump, but Trump hasn't said go out there. If you see him at a fucking gas station, get in their face and create a crowd and yell at him. I swear to God, if I ever fucking see Maxine Waters, I am going to create the biggest crowd. but I guarantee you that you would never see that bitch out. You know what I'm saying? Like these people like Maxine Waters, this is one of the only times you'll ever hear me say I have respect for Chuck Schumer, but I do have respect for Chuck Schumer in this regard. But like Maxine Waters, Jerry Nadler, Nancy Pelosi, you can't call them. Every other, you know, or not every, but majority of the other people in Congress, you can call them and either talk to somebody in their office and leave a message, or you can just leave a message. You don't get to talk to Maxine Waters. There's numbers for her online, but you don't ever, you can't leave a message. They're the ones that when you call, it says the mailbox is full. It's because they don't give a shit. They get probably a lot of people calling, talking shit to them because they see the hypocrisy. And so you don't get to, but Maxine Waters isn't just going to be out. And you see what happens. They have all the personal security. Like when Laura Loomer comes up and tries to talk to these people, they'll fucking rough you up too. but you know, if people have to be, you should, the whole thing is treat people like you would be treated. The whole thing is, you know, judge not lest you be judged. So, you know, if you're taking money from a special interest, then you don't get to go out and bitch about special interest. But we've forgotten that because we're not worried about the substance of our arguments. We're not worried about arguing the complexities of policy. We're interested in labeling each other and just trying to convince, you know, the politicians like Maxine Waters doesn't want to debate Trump on the substance of his policy, even though there's plenty they disagree on that is substantive. You know, there are plenty of policies that Maxine Waters and Donald Trump vastly disagree. But it's not necessarily popular for Maxine Waters to be honest about what she thinks. And whatever you think about Donald Trump, he is. That's one thing you get from him. He tells you what he's going to do and how he's going to do it. For all the stuff that people want to act like he's this slippery fuck, he's pretty much wears it on his sleeve. You know, I mean, this guy's an open book. But Maxine Waters, she doesn't have the kind of faith in what she believes in. She wants to sit there and argue the substance of the differences in policy. She just wants to convince you that Donald Trump is a shithead. He's a racist. He's a bigot. He's a fucking sexist. He's a xenophobe. He's a homophobe. He's all these things. And she feels like if she can just convince you of that, then you won't vote for him and you will vote for her. And unfortunately for a lot of people, that's all that they've been conditioned to it. But, you know, we have to start trying to get to a point to where we get back to that. We get back to that thing of where this is why I disagree with you. But also, and this was something I had written in my Facebook thing, I don't just have to be able to accept that I'm wrong. I have to be able to accept that you're right and they're not the same thing. And that's, I think, the thing that people have gotten when they talk about being tribal. It's like both sides are guilty of it. And it's the idea that, you know, it's like some kind of sporting event where you just can't stand to watch the other team score. But that's what politics is. It's give and take. It's supposed to be. And we've just gotten to this real sour place with it. And it's unfortunately, I don't think that Donald Trump alone is going to be able to root out a lot of the swamp, because until people start to really see that they may not like Donald Trump, but they shouldn't like for the same reasons that they think they don't like Donald Trump, they really shouldn't like Nancy Pelosi or, you know, Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden or Maxine Waters. There's other people that are Democrats that it remains to be seen, but for the reasons that you don't like these people or you don't like Donald Trump, all the things that Maxine Waters accuses Trump of doing, she does. She's a racist. She's used the government to enrich herself. She's unethical. She's made money off of bailouts and used her position in the government again to enrich herself and her family. She's sleazy. She's, you know, unethical to a high degree, like the most unethical person in Congress. But you know, you ask a typical leftist and, you know, she's the greatest thing because she calls Trump a racist. Well, I guarantee you that Maxine Waters fucking hates white people. You know, she's the only color she's really worried about, though, is green. You know, she'll work with whoever to make that happen. She's fucking sick of it.
It's a I don't know. It'd be a tough. It would be a tough road to hoe to get back to that point. I mean, you got that, and then, you know, dealing with people like that, or this guy, this Swalwell or whatever, this California.
My guy, he's going to fucking nuke us to take our guns away?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it's not like...
He thought he was being clever, too.
Did he type that out right?
Yeah.
On something.
What it was
he didn't just slip it out.
You know that Joe Biggs guy,
right? Rambo Biggs or whatever.
Whatever the guy that's on Twitter.
He used to be on InfoWars, right?
I don't know, maybe, but he's one of the guys on Twitter. You know, kind of a big guy with a beard, and he was responding to something somebody else had said. It wasn't something that Swalwell had said originally, but it was something where Big said, like, come and take it. The guy was talking about gun confiscation or something, and he said, come and get it. And Swalwell you know, like it was kind of laughing and said, yeah, the U.S. has got nukes, bud, and they work, you know. And literally Biggs was like, did you just fucking say that you were going to nuke us? And he's like, I'm just trying to make the point that, you know, your AR is no match against the government if you think you're going to stand up. And it's like, man, that's exactly what the Second Amendment is for. The king, you know, King George, the tyranny of the government. And right. I mean, you know, it's like, so you're against school shootings, but you'd nuke Americans to get their guns? I mean, what the fuck? It's like,
what's the point then?
I mean, well, it's like the Owen Benjamin was saying.
It's so retarded on so many levels.
Fucking just idiot David Hogg. Where, dude, I know that. Well, I'm not going to say that. That'd probably a bridge too far, but what I was going to say. But anyway, I won't go there. But he's a fucking turd. And he's like, imagine if somebody said, oh, it's so stupid. I just don't even know if I want to repeat it. It's like, imagine if somebody said that the answer to shark attacks was more sharks. And it's like, I heard Owen Benjamin say, and it was a pretty good thing. He's like, yeah, well, once you cut your dick off to prevent rape. You know, I mean, it's the reality. That is like that's one of the greatest things that, you know, that I've ever fucking heard when it comes to that whole gun debate. And actually, Dana Lash responded, was like, nope, actually, the best way to deal with a shark's a harpoon gun.
Yeah.
That's, you know, exactly, or, right. You know, I was even thinking about it too. And you could say, like, well, actually, more dolphins, you know, which would, in my analogy, is like the good guy with the gun. But I think dolphins fucking kick the shit out of sharks or something.
Well, it's sharks. It's that whole, you know, this whole thing, you know, a lot of anti-gun people make. It's like the gun has its own, like it's an entity of itself, like it can get up and do things on its own without any help. And, you know, I saw a quote, and I don't know if it's true, if he actually said it, but I think Ozzy Osbourne is what they were quoting, and he said, if guns actually kill people, then why do we send people to war? Why don't we just send the guns? You know what right. I mean? And like, that makes so much sense. And that's what a lot of people, you know, they get lost in all the bullshit of the gun thing. And they don't realize that a gun, if I had 15 million guns and they just sat in a box, they would never, ever kill anybody, you know?
Right.
And it just blows my mind that people still, they don't ever want to blame the person, you know, they will to, like the mainstream media will to an extent, but at the end of the day, somebody made the decision to kill people, regardless of if it's with a gun or something else, you know?
Well, and again, it's one of these arguments that's not so simple.
Right.
You know, and whenever Democrats are like, well, can't you even compromise a little bit? It's like, we don't fucking trust you, you know, because there's no little compromise with you fuckers. You know, do I think that you should have to go through like a background check to get a gun? I mean, yeah, in some cases, depending on the gun, I think that you should, you know, if you've had a history of like mental illness or for whatever reason. I mean, but I don't think that people should be limited on the kind of guns that they can have. I guess I think that's a controversial position, but I think that to a certain extent, it's fulfilling the sense of if you wanted to have a well-armed militia, you should be able to have one. It's usually the militias aren't going out murdering people. You know, their whole point is just people that want to protect their families. Or want to protect their land. Usually anytime something happens with these like militias that the government, it's cause it all started. Cause the government was like trying to take their land or some shit. It's usually initiated by like the ATF or whatever. I mean, I'm not talking about like the Branch Davidian crap, but I'm talking about these people that would be like on a ranch. You know, I can't remember specific cases, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And I think you should be able to get whatever kind of gun you want. It's just, it's silly that the whole reason that somebody like Eric Swalwell, the cuck, is trying to take away ARs is because they want to, they want to categorize them as assault weapons. But then in that tweet, he said, your AR is like no match against the government. And, you know, take the nukes out of it. You're right. If the military comes in with like an M4 or AK-40s, whatever, these fully automatic assault rifles. Yeah, I mean, an AR is not a weapon of war. So you're then admitting, you know, that this is not an assault style weapon. It is, you know, weapons that have, you know, more high capacity or whatever. But I mean, seriously, I don't think that if you are somebody who takes enough time to shoot, if you had an AR or if you had like four Glocks, I don't know that you could really tell a big difference. If I, you know, and I would never want to hurt somebody with a gun or otherwise. So I guess I won't say I, but if a person that was trained, and I'm not saying formally trained, I'm saying like they went to the range a bunch, but you know, they had a couple Glock 19s, a couple Glock 22s, and even just had the magazine that comes with it, which I think is like 15 rounds. And you went in somewhere and you were able to rapid fire with, and you had four guns that you could reload. I don't think you could tell the difference, but that you could probably get off more rounds than you could get off with an AR. I don't know. I've not fired a, I have not actually fired an AR-15, but when you hear the videos, like you can get off 15 rounds in a Glock pretty quickly. And I think I've watched an NRA video where the guy was basically making the point that the person, if you know how to use a gun, he had a shotgun and he was getting off a ton of rounds. If you know how to use a gun, then how do you categorize a gun and what's an assault style? I mean, they have those little 9mm, little look like, I mean, I can't remember the name of them, it looks like a little small AR or something, but they're like the little 9mm or 45, and they come with, I think, a pretty small magazine, but it really is not much more than a handgun. It's not even an AR, but it looks like a what people would assign as an assault rifle. But you probably couldn't tell the difference between that and a handgun. I don't know. I think I'm drifting here, ranting with this, but the idea just being that, I think Democrats want to find a foothold to start attacking our Second Amendment rights, and if they feel like the AR argument is one of their strongest, which is why they focus in on it so much. But honestly, if they thought they could take away handguns, they would fucking take away handguns. Now, they wouldn't take them away from their own security, but they would sure as shit take them away from you. But at the same time, like I said, I do feel like you should have to go through some shit to buy a gun. You know, I think a lot of the people that end up getting guns, they slip through the cracks. So, I mean, yeah, sure. Part of that is because you have to go through the fucking bureaucracy of the government, you know, either state or federal, however they do. Like if you go buy a gun academy, they run your license and check and make sure that like you're not a felon and there's no red flags, and then they'll sell you the gun. Well, part of the reason that fails sometimes is like the one of the shooters wasn't supposed to have one because he was dishonorably discharged from the military, but the military didn't report it. So that's part of the failing is the government. The fact that they're having to rely on bureaucracy. So, leaving the government in charge of my safety, I'm not just real fucking interested in that. I've got multiple guns here in this house. And, if you try to get into this house, I'm going to do my best to stop you. And I think that if people want to have an AR-15 in their house for home defense, which is at the end of the day, the people that say you're not going to hunt with one, you're damn right. But maybe I feel more comfortable with that defending my house than I do a pistol. I mean, maybe I like a shotgun. I can tell you, though, if I was breaking into somebody's house, I'd probably rather be shot by an AR-15 than up close with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to personal preference, because handguns, you can do just as much damage with a handgun, but for some people, it's harder to control. It's hard to hit. When you start firing off rounds with a handgun, it takes some practice to be able to remain on target. And that's what they want you to do, is pop, 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 pop. If somebody like the gun course I took, that's what they wanted you to do. If you were going to shoot at somebody, they wanted you to try to get off like 5 or 6 rounds on them. And it's not easy to do necessarily with a handgun and be seriously accurate, because depending on what kind of gun you have, it'll jump all over the place. But some people have a better luck holding a rifle steady and secure. So a lot of the things come down to personal reference. I think that people should be able to protect their home with whatever they want to protect their home. Now, I don't think people should necessarily have maybe like AK-47s, but do you know who has AK-47s? The criminals, the fucking gangbangers. They have no problem getting them. So, I mean, if the guy that's going to potentially break into my house is going to have an AK-47, I don't know. Maybe I should be able to have one too. I don't think that the criminals should be better armed than everyday citizens. That was how, back in the days, you hear about like Bonnie and Clyde, and that they just had like faster cars and better guns. They had Tommy guns and they had really fast cars, and the cops were carrying pistols and driving, really slow cars. And so Bonnie and Clyde could just go rob banks because nobody could catch them. And if they did catch up with them, they were outgunned. If the police had been back then as well, that was when the FBI was really cutting teeth on trying to enforce federal law back in the days with those gangsters like Dillinger and, I think he's one of the ones that the FBI, they shot him and killed him. But that was the thing. In a lot of cases, the criminals had better weapons than the police. And I don't see even police with AK-47s, but you see criminals. They're getting the guns. The guns are getting over here. They're getting put in the hands. So I just think it's a tough issue. We should be able to have an adult conversation without saying, if you don't just 100% let me take away your guns, you hate all the kids. Fuck you. If you don't have anything better than that to say, then go fuck yourself. I won't agree to anything that you want to try to propose if you can't be a fucking adult about it, and if you can't have a substantive argument of why I should try to compromise the rights guaranteed to me by my Constitution. If we're not going to be adults, then go fuck yourself. And yeah, try to come and take them. If you think you're going to take guns with nukes, good fucking luck with that one, asswipe. Obviously Swalwell has like access probably to the big bunker under the Denver airport, so he let that slip. So I hope if the shit does go down, people know to follow that cocksucker. I'm going to fucking Swalwell's house and wait until I'm waiting till you come outside, motherfucker. I know you got the fucking 411 on the fucking bunker. You don't mention nuking people unless you know that you and your family are going to be on like that giant boat. Anyway,
good stuff.
Well, you got anything you want to add on here to the end? I think there was probably a little bit less ranting. There needs to be a little less Glenn and a little more Kick, you know. There's some funny stuff on Reddit that I wanted to remember about, but I forgot. And there's some other stuff that we got to last night, but you know.
There was a funny reading about that Swallow guy. Some guy, of course, let the memes begin, you know, and
Swallow well.
You're right, but somebody had put up, you know, Eric Swalwell's, you know, future or something for Republicans or something, and it showed the scene from Terminator 2 where the bomb goes off. It's just like, it was so damn funny, man.
I'm telling you, that one I sent you earlier today where it's got that stupid picture of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whatever. Yeah. I get so tired of saying her whole name. By the time I start saying her name, by the time I get done, I'm already angry that I'm having to talk about her. But that one picture of her with her eyes are really wide, and it's like,
yeah.
And the thing said, hates capitalism, has three capital letters in her name.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes me love the internet so much. People are so fucking hilarious.
Yeah, she's going to be entertaining for a while, I feel like. She's just going to be a gold mine for guys like that that like to meme and send stuff out. That guy that sent out the Terminator scene, his tweet was very innovative proposal from Representative Swalwell to gerrymandering districts blue from red.
It's funny that Trump has been saying too that he really likes Nancy Pelosi and he'll help her get elected, and he's just talking really good about her. He's trying to fucking sink her ship.
It's so funny, man.
I love that. There is one I'll mention here real quick. Where's Bernie Sanders the other day decides to tweet, here's the simple truth, we have a president who's a racist. I'm trying to do it like Bernie.
We have a president who is racist, a president who is a sexist, and a president who is a xenophobe, and a president who is a religious bigot. We have got to confront the truth.
I don't know. I think I've lost that and gotten into like one of the guys from The Princess Bride, but...
And reject Trump's bigotry.
And this guy, DC Drano, tweets back to him, on the day that President Trump endorses a bipartisan bill to reform our prison system and give black and Hispanic criminals that serve their time a second chance in life, this is what you tweet. Tell me again who's dividing the country. You know, and I mean, this is the thing. People are just, oh, this is the funniest thing. This is the last thing, we'll stop. But somebody tweeted, why does Melania Trump always look like she's trying to bend spoons with her mind? And I actually thought that was pretty funny. It was a lefty that tweeted that, and he's got all these pictures of her that she's got, you know, she does kind of have that look on her face all the time. I actually thought that was funny. But then it's got like a picture of Michelle Obama with like grabbing her dick, and it says, I much prefer Melania's bending spoons look to Mikey B's bending dudes look any day.
That's hilarious. And it's true. I mean, yeah. Melania Trump's, you know, she's hot, man. She's smoking.
Oh, yeah.
What a smoking lady. And then,
Trump, she's like the hot wife that Trump cheats on. She's not even, like, she's the main thing. Like,
right.
You know, she's smoking hot, but she's the one that gets cheated on.
Yeah, she's freaking smoking, dude. And, like, she gets disrespected so bad, like... In all honesty, she's like head and shoulders above, you know, Michelle Obama, man, by a long shot.
Yeah.
Michelle could be a man, you know. I'm not ruling that possibility out at all by any means.
No, well, especially when I found out that her kids were from like artificial insemination. Oh, did you hear about that? Like, no. Or I don't know if it's actually artificial insemination. It's the with the IVF or what is it? You know, it's where they fertilize your eggs. Like Obama didn't actually put his dick in her and make the babies. Like they did the in vitro. I think it's in vitro. Oh, that's what it is.
Really?
They did the in vitro, like deal.
Well, so, as a heterosexual man, I could understand that. You know, I wouldn't want to impregnate Michelle Obama the natural way.
Well, but I mean, just even it, to me admitting that, you know, when you find out that like Joan, the whole thing, I don't know if we've talked about this before, if I deleted one of those episodes, but you know, Joan Crawford calls her a man. A week later, she dies from a sore throat.
Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, one of the few deaths. It's the big killer.
Like, nothing fucking happens. You know, it's like, and people go, oh, nah, you know. And like,
oh, yeah, Andrew, my brother
Andrew
died.
Breitbart dies, and then the guy that did the autopsy dies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever. You know, this shit is not a fucking. The only thing that bothers me about life is I don't, you know, I have faith. In the Bible, I have faith, but it also says that we just don't know what's actually going to happen after we die.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest fear is that I want to like know all the secrets, you know, like when I die or something, I want to be able to go to like, okay, well, hey, what really happened with Seth Rich? I gotta know. Was it really just that? Some guys killed him and didn't even take his watch? Or, you know, was he the guy? I mean, he obviously was the fucking guy, but I want to be able to know the secrets. There's some things we'll never know, but, you know, I mean, I want to see Michelle Obama naked and it has no, like, sexual interest at all. I just, you know, I want to see because I'd be willing to bet even if she has a vagina, that it's pretty like that. There's probably something off about it. I'm not saying like even if she is a woman, was born a woman. I don't know. I think there'd be something off about it.
There's something off for sure.
I don't
want
to get any more graphic than there, but I mean, if she had a cock. I don't think anybody would really be surprised.
Mm-mm.
And I want her to know if she's one of the 14 people that listens to this podcast, Michelle, I think you should do it. I think that you should do it for, you know, I think you should show everybody that you're a man for so that all these, you know, trans children will not have to live in fear. They'll know that somebody they admire and love was all this time a trans male. Joan Rivers was right. And I think you should do it. I think you should come out. I think you should just, you don't have to be graphic. You don't have to show your dick. I think people would all believe you. If you go on Oprah and you're like, Oprah, it's time that we're honest, that sometimes me and Stedman take a, one takes the front, the other takes the back.
I think the
and Obama is cucked in the corner, just jerking it.
I think the bigger issue of that whole thing is
we just lost half our viewership.
Well,
with that one,
yeah. So 7 people quit listening.
Maybe they didn't. Maybe they probably haven't made it this long. I think we're like 83 minutes in.
The real thing there is the bigger issue is the death from sore throats that's really plaguing the country. Yeah.
She had a fucking horse throat, and she went into to have a horse throat procedure done. She went into a coma and died.
The only horse,
and nothing ever happened to anybody for it. You know, yeah. Like the clinic was never. You know, people were like, "Oh yeah, sure. Well, I'll continue to go there and get these things done." You know, if you're the clinic that Joan Crawford go to for your horse throat, then you know. And then she dies and nothing happens. Like people don't stop going there.
See,
then
this is fucked up. This is why I don't go to the doctor unless it's very, very serious. Because I mean, she might be a hypochondriac. We need to look into that too, because most people just go to the store and buy some Robitussin or something like that. You know,
when you got money, you know, you have money. There's procedures. Yeah. There's you know, you could get like a B12 IV if you're feeling under the weather. You could be like Keith Richards and get blood transfusions from like 9-year-olds.
Oh, man.
Or, you know, whatever those people do. Whatever those fucking people do. I consider myself fortunate that I wasn't born to one of those super wealthy. I think maybe the Waltons would have been fine. If you were like a one of Sam Walton's kids, you're probably not old enough money that you were into some of the freaky shit. But I think if you're like the Rockefellers, then there's like some weird shit those kids have to go through. And those super wealthy families, you watch these shows where they talk about, they like put them in cages and they were raised by their nannies and their parents didn't even fucking, you know, that was, my parents were poor as shit and, they fucked up in a lot of ways. I love them. They also made, you know, five kids that were not totally unsuccessful people. So everybody did fairly well, I guess. But I can't imagine. You know, we knew they loved us, and that I think is essential to overcome a lot of the other ways they fucked us up. And so I can't imagine being from one of those families where your parents actually just don't give a shit about you. I think that is, you know, that's the kind of thing that sort of goes hand in hand with kids that grow up without fathers or without parents or get abused. You know, nothing is simple. And, so, you know, I don't think you want to be Jay-Z's kids because those kids are fucked. They don't have a chance in hell. Even if, like, you know, they're not into all the whatever shit, they're into some of the shit. They probably got, I guarantee you, they're up in that class of people. And I got a feeling like Jimmy Kimmel is like part of, I feel like he's like the fucking gatekeeper to the club of the weird Satanist. You know, there's a lot of times when he says stuff and he has this deadpan look on his face. And it's like, that guy's dead inside. You know, I think that's like Adam Carolla was probably like, nah, you know, I'm just going to stay. Cause he was just like some contractor that got on got on TV and got on the radio and became famous. I think Kimmel was like, I'm ready to sell my fucking soul for whatever I can get. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference between him and Adam Carolla. Because really, you do. But watch fucking Jimmy Kimmel sometimes. Like, especially the weird one where Jim Carrey goes on and he's doing all of the, like, the all-mocking tongue and the all-seeing eyes and that weird Illuminati shit.
Yeah, I've saw that.
And just the way that Jimmy's looking at him.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You know, it's
clip,
just a
man.
Weird, it's a weird thing. It doesn't, and it's not like Jim Carrey was... It's not like Jim Carrey was out there doing a fucking bit.
Right.
It's almost like it was like one of those sort of humiliation, submission type of things. But if you look at Jimmy Kimmel, like, that dude has seen some shit. Like, he's seen some children murdered. I don't know, man. It's fucked up. But anyway, we've gone on and on here, but I think it's good stuff. I know I haven't done it, but I'm going to go ahead and start that email, glennkeck2020, at Gmail. And, if you have anything awful to say, if you want to hurt my feelings, you wouldn't really have to try too hard. But I want to put that out there because I like to have feedback. Just keep in mind that we know that the quality of this isn't great. And we know that we're not great at it yet, but we're just trying to get better. And the only way sometimes to get better is to just do something. And so hopefully, though, I feel like as every episode we do, we get a little bit better at it. So if you're going to tell us like, hey, the sound quality is not that great, or you guys are boring, it's like, okay, well, I can appreciate that criticism. But to some level, the obvious things I think we're aware of. But we're just trying to dig around and find interesting things to talk about and give a little bit different perspective. A lot of these other people that talk, they have at some point had some kind of access. You know, like it's interesting to hear Gavin McInnes or Owen Benjamin talk because they've actually been there, a part of Hollywood and wealthy people, knowing famous people. And so they can tell you stories about, so we can't do that. We don't know anybody. We've never been anywhere. We never done. I played music on the kind of the low rung of the thing. I've met a few pretty famous musicians, but I don't have any really cool stories from it. I could probably make up some good ones. Just a couple regular guys talking about things and trying not to say, you know, a lot. That's if you're going to say, you know, less, I know. And you know, too. We all know. We know. But for Glenn Keck and Maggie Dave, thank you for listening. And I will see you soon.